This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.3 FM, streaming live at freakradio.org, freakradio.org. If you happen to be listening to us now on the radio airwaves, you may also tap into our online service by going to freakradio.org and following the instructions on our main webpage, which has been slightly redesigned, intended to be more easily readable. Follow the instructions for picking up our free streaming service.
I suppose that there are those who'll say he had it easy, had it made in fact, before he'd even begun. But they don't know the things I know. I was always with him. It may sound strange, we were more than friends. It's hard to tell the truth when no one wants to listen, when no one really cares what's going on. And it's hard to stand alone when you need someone beside you. Your spirit, your faith must be strong. What one man can do is dream. What one man can do is love. What one man can do is change the world and make it young again. Here you see what one man can do. As shaded as his eyes might be, that's how bright his mind is. That's how strong his love for you and me. The friend to all the universe, grandfather of the future, everything that I would like to be. What one man can do is dream. What one man can do is love. What one man can do is change the world and make it new again. Here you see what one man can do. What one man can do is dream. What one man can do is love. What one man can do is change the world and make it work again. Here you see what one man can do.
My man, John Denver. Honest, really. Just can't imagine old JD can still be anybody's man. That's the inspirational theme song for the moment. And this is the Mideast Migraines program for Monday, November 24th, 2014. It's 3:05 in the afternoon, 1505 hours. And if that matches with your own personal time-space continuum, then you know the show is live at 3:05. Therefore, you are invited to call in at any time. Area code 831-427-3772. Again, that's area 831 here in Santa Cruz County on the left coast of North America. 427-3772, 427-3772. still getting things up here now. We're recording and we're streaming along and broadcasting along. Mideast Migraines with your friendly neighborhood Palestinian American Ren Tawil. Back in my old stomping grounds of my native California, dual Bay Area, I grew up somewhere between one Bay Area and the other, here in more or less northern / central California. My father is a native of Jerusalem, a Christian, which pretty much determines that he is an Arab native of Palestine. Okay, let's get right into it here. Let's start with something that caught my eye. From Dr. Jazz, passed along to us by Dr. Jazz. And I think, well, regardless of where it came from, November 20, last Thursday. It's not a lot of fun. I'm trying to adjust the mic here. Okay, do two things at once, at least two things at once. NBC Wall Street Journal poll reveals America's priorities. Guess how they match with the GOP lawmakers' priorities. GOP stands for Grand Old Party, which is sort of the affectionate name for the American Republican Party. Again, brought to us by Dr. Jazz. The new NBC Wall Street Journal poll, conducted November 14 to 17, provides a post-election snapshot of American voter expectations, including their priorities for actions Congress should take. Can you guess how they match up with Republican lawmakers' priorities? It's a real shocker, folks. Now, this is according to the poll. The People's Agenda for Congress. Number one, first priority, 80% support access to lower-cost student loans. Two, 75% support increased spending on infrastructure. Three, raising the minimum wage. Four, emergency funding for fighting Ebola in Africa. Not the source. The fifth priority, according to the poll, is addressing climate change and reducing carbon emissions. That's 59% of those polled. And number six, building the Keystone Pipeline. People, the American public, according to this poll, actually want to build the Keystone Pipeline as priority number six, coming in at 54%. Agenda items registering below 50% support were lowering taxes by closing loopholes, approving U.S. troops to fight ISIS in Iraq and Syria, reducing Medicare and Social Security benefits for wealthy retirees, new trade agreements with Asian nations, lowering corporate tax rates, cutting funding for the ACA, that is the American, ACA is the Access to Healthcare, what does it stand for? That's Obamacare there. Access to Healthcare or something or other. A path to citizenship and below 50% agenda item also includes raising Social Security retirement age. Says here, I thought it would be insightful to compare America's priorities with those of our newly elected Congress, which is to say, Republican. According to PolitiFact.com, House Speaker John Boehner and soon-to-be Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell have laid out some of their top legislative priorities. It's a range of issues, everything from dismantling the Affordable Care Act, that's your ACA right there, everything from dismantling the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, to passing international trade agreements and shutting down the possibility of another shutdown, of another government shutdown. Here is PolitiFact's list in the order presented. These are the Republican, as they have stated it themselves, priorities. Number one for them is to authorize the Keystone Pipeline, whereas according to the those Americans polled, that was item number six. First and foremost, authorize the Keystone Pipeline. The cause célèbre of the moment. Number two, repeal Obamacare, the ACA. Three, pass the Hire More Heroes Veterans Act. Hire more veterans. Republican priority number four, pass Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement with Asia. More corporate globalization. Five, lower corporate taxes. Corporate taxes, lower, less. Priority number six is thwarting Obama on immigration executive action. And number seven, rein in the EPA and roll back environmental regulations. Hardy har. Surprise of surprises. That, again, that according to current House Speaker John Boehner and soon-to-be Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republicans. In a Wall Street Journal op-ed published the day after the election, Boehner and McConnell outline some of their legislative priorities. It's, Okay, yes, I just read that. This is strange. Everything from dismantling the Affordable Care Act to passing international trade agreements and shutting down the possibility of another government shutdown. Okay, yeah, I did read that. Sorry, folks. And again, this is from, it says here in a Wall Street Journal opinion editorial published the day after the election, Boehner and McConnell outlined those legislative priorities. And keeping in mind their promise, honor the voters' trust, quote unquote, it is interesting to note that there is only one item in common with the voters' actual agenda for Congress. With the voters' agenda for Congress, which is number six on the people's list and number two on B&M's list. Boehner and Mitchell. Other than that, and that's, of course, the Keystone Pipeline. Other than that, these Republican leaders address none of the issues Americans have said are the most important. Nothing about student loans or the cost of college. Nothing about infrastructure, bridges, and roads. Nothing about the minimum wage. After all their hysteria before the election, nothing about money to fight the Ebola outbreak. And instead of addressing climate change and reducing carbon emissions, they, of course, want to do just the opposite. Yeah, of course. How's that for honoring the voters' trust? It is clear the GOP doesn't trust voters at all because they will do everything in their power to lower voter enthusiasm and participation and therefore have no intention of honoring voters' trust by addressing the issues that matter most. The GOP agenda is the Koch brothers' agenda. It is Sheldon Adelson's, the Waltons, and the oil company's agenda. Originally posted to Dr. Jazz on November 20, also republished by Community Spotlight. Pretty nifty, huh? Oh, you don't want me to just talk about Arabs and Jews during the full 2 hours, do you? I mean, it's not even a full 2 hour show. It's an hour 55 minutes. Got to throw in a little sidelight every once in a while, wake people up. I just came across this. actually a few days ago, looked at it for the first time within the last half hour. Conflict kitchen controversy displays fear of facing Palestinian reality. Now, if this will only... Christ. It's been a hell of a week, folks. Jesus. Okay. We'll move along to something else. In the meantime, enjoy some more of John Denver.
Perhaps love is like a resting place, a shelter from the storm. It exists to give you comfort, it is there to keep you warm. And in those times of trouble, when you are most alone, the memory of love will bring you home.
This is a John Denver album. This is Placido Domingo singing. Here's John.
Perhaps an open door, it invites you to come closer, it wants to show you more. And even if you lose yourself and don't know what to do, the memory of love will see you through.
Oh, love to some is like a cloud, to some as strong as steel.
For some a way of living, for some way to feel.
And some say love is holding on, and some say letting go. And some say love is everything, some say they don't know.
Perhaps love is like the ocean, full of conflict, full of pain. Like a fire when it's cold outside, thunder when it rains.
If I forever and all my dreams come true, my memories of love will be of you. And some say love is holding on, and some say letting go,
and some say love. And some say they don't know. Perhaps love is like the ocean, full of conflict, full of pain. Like a fire when it's cold outside, thunder when it rains.
If I should live forever and all my dreams come true, my memories of love will be of you.
Isn't that lovely? The song is Perhaps Love, which Denver's widow, Annie, claims is her favorite of all his songs, the deepest. They transcribed the entire lyrics of that song onto either John Denver's tombstone or his some memorial somewhere. Annie saw to that. Perhaps Love, in a vocal duet with Placido Domingo. Earlier, you heard when I started my show off, was Denver's What One Man Can Do. Remember the inspirational tune? Okay. Conflict Kitchen Controversy displays fear of facing Palestinian reality. This is from Muzzle Watch. Muzzle Watch is a featured RSS feed sponsored by Jewish Voice for Peace. Catch the name, folks. Appreciate Muzzle Watch. Tracking efforts to stifle open debate about U.S.-Israeli foreign policy. And believe me, this is a big, huge problem, folks. A local perspective on the efforts to shut down a restaurant that serves up Palestinian food and perspectives. By Ella Mason, Jewish Voice for Peace, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Not the Pittsburgh in California. The one in out east. When you think about the sites that play a role in the Israel-Palestine conflict, a few places may come to mind. Oslo, Norway, Egypt, Camp David, but probably not Pittsburgh. Yet this small post-industrial town has been embroiled in a controversy that has made headlines around the world. It all begins with the story of the Conflict Kitchen, an innovative art project created by Carnegie Mellon University art professor John Rubin. The Conflict Kitchen is a takeout restaurant that only serves food from countries with whom the United States is in some type of conflict. Since its opening in 2010, it has served food from Afghanistan, North Korea, Venezuela, Iran, Cuba, and Colombia. Alongside food, the kitchen produces written educational works, usually interviews with people from the country in question about their perspectives on food, dating, aging, school, and politics. The kitchen sees its mission is bringing Americans a deeper understanding of the people and cultures of these nations we hear about primarily as headline abstractions. At the end of September, the Conflict Kitchen opened their newest installment of the project, a Palestinian takeout restaurant. Some argue that Palestine was a strange choice for the kitchen. They ask, is the U.S. really at conflict with Palestine? The U.S. gives roughly $4 billion of aid, much of it military, to Israel. The nation actively at war with and occupying Palestine. Furthermore, the U.S.'s continuing blockage in the United Nations of Palestinian statehood helps to maintain what has become the status quo of occupation. In this context, the United States could certainly be seen as having a conflict with Palestine, or at the very least, as being fundamentally entangled in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Pittsburgh has a very small Palestinian population. So as a local Jewish artist with a great deal of interest in the ongoing conflict, I was thrilled to hear that the Conflict Kitchen was taking on Palestine and giving these often silenced voices a platform to be heard in Pittsburgh. Unfortunately, even before the Palestinian iteration opened, the Jewish Federation of Greater Pittsburgh, the JFGP, made efforts to have the restaurant shut down. Greg Roman, a former Israeli soldier and current director of Jewish community relations for the Federation, attempted to strong-arm the University of Pittsburgh's Honors College, one of the project sponsors, into canceling the September 30th kickoff event. When that didn't work, he pressured them to add him to a panel on Palestinian culture. How he attempted to justify this, being neither a Palestinian nor an academic nor a cultural worker, I do not know. When this tactic also failed, Roman came to the event with an organized group of right-wing Israelis who used their time to participate by claiming that Palestinians living in Israel face no discrimination there. This is roughly the same stance that some Americans take when they claim that the U.S. no longer has systemic racism. Even Mizrahi or Arab Jews face racial discrimination in Israel. Jews, Arab Jews. And the recent controversy there surrounding African refugees clearly demonstrates that racism and discrimination is just as big a problem in Israel as it is anywhere else. For a more detailed account of what happened at the September 30th event, see this excellent article by a local in attendance, and it doesn't name it, it simply provides an internet link here. So we'll continue with this article here. Despite Roman and the Federation's attempt to derail the kickoff event, the Palestinian restaurant opened with a flourish and had several weeks of excellent sales and educational events. Slowly, the story began to pick up in local and national media. Then, on October 7th, a food writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette wrote an article that essentially served as a mouthpiece for Greg Roman. The article took verbatim quotes from Roman, describing the conflict kitchen as being, quote, anti-Israel, and with the implication that this also qualified as anti-Semitism. Despite having interviewed the staff of the kitchen, the writer failed to include any of their responses, nor did she investigate the truth of Roman's claims. Simultaneously, the National Jewish Youth Organization B'nai B'rith wrote a letter to the Heinz Foundation in which it threatened to embarrass Secretary of State John Kerry. If this seems like a strange connection, that's because it is. Secretary Kerry, of course, has been making an effort to calm the hostilities in Israel-Palestine since the summer war. Kerry's wife, Teresa Heinz Kerry, sits on the board of the Heinz Foundation. The Heinz Foundation's arts department gave the conflict kitchen a small grant over a year ago when it moved locations. The grant ran out. Excuse me. Move this along here. The grant ran out long before the kitchen decided to pursue its Palestinian project. Furthermore, the creations of artists supported by the foundation clearly have nothing to do with the political leanings of anyone at the foundation, but nevertheless, the B'nai B'rith youth organization was determined to censor and shut down a project they disagree with. Project that they disagree with. Perhaps because it makes them uncomfortable to hear Palestinian perspectives on the occupation? I understand. It can be difficult to come to terms with your privilege. But that's an important part of growing up. This next sentence is in italic writing. Against the background of this inflated rhetoric, Conflict Kitchen founder John Rubin, a Jewish artist, and his staff received a death threat. Not one of the Pittsburgh Jewish institutions mentioned that this anti-Semitic act occurred. I'll read that again. Not one of the Pittsburgh Jewish institutions in Pittsburgh, mentioned that this anti-Semitic act occurred, referring to the death threat as being anti-Semitic because they threatened a Jew. In fact, when an individual did point this out on a Jewish community Facebook group, he was promptly expelled from the group. On Saturday, November 8th, the conflict kitchen closed while the police investigated the veracity of the death threat. Meanwhile, community supporters of all faiths and ethnicities gathered together to show their support. The windows of the restaurant were covered with notes of support. And when Monday came and the restaurant was still closed, a crowd of 200 people gathered, lining up the same way we would for falafel. People took turns walking up to the window and declaring why they supported this project, and particularly in its Palestinian version. It was a beautiful show of support for a project that has brought hope and pride to this city, and a clear demonstration of art's ability to bring people together. And here's the photograph to prove it. On Wednesday, November 12, the kitchen was back open. The Federation has formally condemned the death threats, but in their statement they put the blame on the conflict kitchen itself, claiming that the project is, and I quote, inciting against Israelis and Jews. Facebook comments critical of the statement were deleted within minutes. Dissent from the party line is not tolerated by the Federation. So that would be, I guess, the Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh's Facebook page, where their own people, or perhaps anybody, criticized the Federation statement that inciting against Israelis and Jews was not an appropriate thing to say, but those statements were ethnically cleansed. Those statements were deleted and censored, effectively, totally censored. Also on Wednesday, Hillel announced through an article in the Jewish Chronicle that they would be funding a pop-up coexistence kitchen for several days within campus dining halls at Carnegie Mellon University and the University of Pittsburgh. Hillel announced that. They promised to give a, quote, more balanced view of the Middle East focused on, quote, coexistence rather than conflict. This willful misreading of the purpose of the conflict kitchen is so extreme, it's hard to imagine students buying into that narrative. And here we go. Someone is calling. Hello, you are on the air.
Yes, my name's Bobby. I'm a musician. And I see that they cut you off from your streaming. Well, I've volunteered to go down there and play live original music to sing about the hypocrisy. Sing about homelessness does not have to happen because we have the right as citizens to go into other people's houses to move our stuff in and squat. I was told that yesterday by two sheriff's deputies.
Would you explain to me which streaming you're talking about?
Streaming on the internet. I'm just, a police officer, and I asked him to leave my yard. He said that this girl was claiming squatting rights. I said, oh, wait a minute, you're telling me that she's squatting here. And so I said, what, you mean I could go to my neighbor's house and they go to work and move my stuff in and it's okay? He said, yes, that's legal. So there's no need for homelessness, just people don't realize that they have the right to do that.
Okay, I'm trying to nail down what you started to say about streaming. Are you talking about free radio stream?
Yeah, they cut it off, and I'm, you know,
when did
that
this
radio
happen?
Streaming
what,
means a
when,
lot
when did
to
this
the
happen?
Area
of day?
Because ideas can come out that aren't pre-approved by some plutocratic entity that controls the what can be said, what can't be said, what can be played, when it can be played, how long it can be, you know, all that kind of stuff. All these rules that you guys are avoiding, yeah, I'm for you. I'm all together for you.
Okay, I appreciate
it. And I
want
to help
comment.
In any way I can as an artist.
Sir?
I play music.
Can
I have guitars. And I, you know,
Listen to me. I'm trying to say something here. You are talking in the middle of a program that does not address homelessness. You were on the air until a moment ago, and I'm trying to find out, I'm trying to nail this down. Do you have a complaint about some streaming on a particular show? Did this happen on a particular day? Who show and who said this? Go ahead.
SantaCruz.com. And it said there that they have, I read this lengthy thing that I can't remember the entity that came along that said that they can't stream, but they're not going to go abide by certain rules and, you know, pay royalties to the company that is trying to dictate the rule at your radio station, right?
I don't know.
Are you following me?
I'm trying to, and you keep cutting me off, and I tried to say, can you hear me, by the way? Are you hearing
me? Yes.
Okay, well, Now, I turned down your volume there for about 30 seconds because I was trying to say something without being interrupted. Now, tell me again, whose show is this on? Are you there?
I'm just calling the number that was on the website.
Yeah, whose show are you talking about?
And I thought I could contact. And that's why I called this number, to volunteer to come down there and play original music.
Okay, can you tell me that you were listening to a particular show on free radio?
I don't have a radio. I was doing it on the internet, and I was just trying to get an idea of what the free radio around here was like. And whenever I got onto the website, the first thing I see is that they won't allow streaming. And then I read this note on the website that said that this governmental, quasi-governmental agency that wants to dictate when you can play something and all that was taking the radio stations off streaming from Free Radio Santa Cruz off the internet stream. And it's not streaming anymore. Right?
I think, now, you might be talking about an old link that we had on our web page, which did for a long time prevent us from using that particular link from streaming. We are streaming, and we are on our online service is broadcasting. If you go, you say you have internet access, right?
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, you need to go to the opening page for Free Radio or Santa Cruz or Freak Radio, freakradio.org, and follow the instructions there.
It's an old link.
Yes,
it's an old link.
I'm looking at it right now. Hang on a moment. Let me see what I got. Let's see what happens here. Okay, did you see where it says contact there?
I'm outdoors. There's someone else in there just doing something.
Listen, what you need to do is the next time you're able to, next time you're online, go to freakradio.org, click on listen, and then there are two links for clicking for dial-up connections or for DSL cable. Click on one of those, and you'll get our streaming link, okay?
Okay.
Now, that's the other thing I want to tell you is if you want to call in during Robert Norris's show, Robert.
Exactly.
That is every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. and Sunday morning 9:30 to 1. You got that?
I sure do.
This program is about Middle Eastern relations. Do you have anything to say about Israelis and Arabs?
Yeah, I sure do.
Sure.
I really do.
Go ahead.
I think that Noam Chomsky and Gore Vidal put it really fast. It's a plutocratic land grab by Israeli-American forces that are suppressing the real news about how the Palestinians have been. What are they going to do, swim for it? They're surrounded, and they keep losing their land. It looks like a slice here, a slice there, all these illegal against things that are being done by the Israelis. Just horrible.
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty bad.
And why do we back them? It just doesn't make sense. We've got enough things to do here.
A lot of hypocrisy, a lot of perverted priorities in the U.S. government's way of allocating funds and looking at things. A lot of undue influence. There's no question about it. That's what Washington lobbying is about. That's what big money and corporate influence in Congress is about. Messing up our priorities and doing things that really don't make sense. Now, my friend, do you want to give me your name, your first name?
Bobby,
thanks for calling, but I do need to move along now with my show. You got those two time segments for Robert Norris's show, Thursday 6 to 8 at night, or Sunday 9:30 a.m. to 1 in the afternoon, okay? Thank you for calling. And even though we get virtually no phone calls here during my show anyway, Not that there's anything wrong with my show. It's actually fairly common. It's a fairly common nuance of free radio, the kind of underground operation that we're involved in. Aside from the fact that we don't get a lot of calls, the percentage of calls during my show very often end up being totally non sequitur to the subject matter. I'm not saying this to belittle the caller or his subject matter, but like he said, he had gone to freakradio.org's website and called the number that was on the screen. I really think that I'm going to bring this matter up at the next meeting, talking about how we can make it easier and have more flexible, pertinent phone numbers for people to bring their concerns and grievances to Freak Radio on, to FRSC on. Okay. It is, shucks, folks, it's 3:41 p.m. this Monday, November 24th, 2014. So the show is live, if you agree with that time and date. So you two can call in, if you're paying attention to what I'm talking about. Let me remind you also, by the way, that the show is being recorded and will end up in my program's Mideast Migraines folder immediately after the end of the program. Those shows within the course of a week or only a few days perhaps end up in my archives. I have two online archives. One is radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4, ALL.NET, radioforall.net. Go there, type in Mideast Migraines, you'll get the full list of recorded programs so that you may listen to them again, share them with others, etc. Even record them to your own personal archives, perhaps. The other internet archive is located at Santa Cruz Media Santa Cruz Media Center, Indy Bay, Indybay, Santa Cruz Media Center, Indy Bay, the Indy Bay Internet Service. My programs are also located there. You may also communicate with me at this program's email address, MideastMadness@GMX.com. That's G as in gigante, or gigantic, M as in mysterious, X as in xylophone.com, MideastMadness@GMX.com. Let's get back to the reading. Now, where was I? We'll start. Okay, we're talking about the Hillel announcement through an article in the Jewish Chronicle out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that they would be funding a pop-up coexistence kitchen for several days within campus dining halls at Carnegie Mellon University and the University of Pittsburgh. They promised to give a, quote, more balanced view of the Middle East focused on, quote, coexistence rather than conflict. This willful misreading of the purpose of the conflict kitchen is so extreme, it's hard to imagine students buying into that narrative. What it demonstrates to me is the desperation these mainstream Zionist institutions feel when confronted with Palestinian narratives and experiences. None of the Palestinian perspectives given voice through the conflict kitchen's events or materials is simply anti-Israeli or anti-Semitic, but many do share the real oppression they face as a consequence of the occupation. The Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh and B'nai B'rith claim that this material makes Israel look bad. I'm inclined to agree, says the author here. But the problem isn't that the material is anti-Israel, quote-unquote. The problem is that Israel is committing some truly atrocious acts. Ultimately, the Federation isn't struggling against the conflict kitchen. They are struggling against reality itself. ultimately, the Federation is not struggling against the conflict kitchen in Pittsburgh. They're struggling against reality itself. Again, this was authored by Ella Mason of Jewish Voice for Peace, Pittsburgh. Jewish Voice for Peace, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And this is from JVP's RSS Muzzle Watch feed to help them track efforts to stifle open debate about U.S.-Israeli foreign policy. I wanted to make one comment on one of the last sentences here. She wrote, "What it demonstrates to me is the desperation these mainstream Zionist institutions feel when confronted with Palestinian narratives and experiences." There are those very hard-headed right-wing Zionist pro-Israeli people who will insist in the most absolute terms that either there is no Palestinian narrative, there's nothing worth listening to, or there's nothing there to listen to, or they will attack it further by saying any Palestinian narrative is absolutely false, and that's generally followed by the call to ignore anyone who claims to have a Palestinian narrative. This of course is just more censorship, more attempt to divert your attention from the other side of the story. There are two sides to every story, and these right-wing Israelis want to monopolize the truth with only their side. But these days, when I see the phrase Palestinian narrative or Palestinian experiences, I immediately thought about Alice Rothschild's, kind of a hard couple of names to put together there. Ms. Alice Rothschild's film, which she produced and directed, entitled Voices Across the Divide. This is currently one of the most, if not the most popular video film available, a documentary on the subject of peace between Arab and Jew. Of course, Alice Rothschild is a Jew herself, an American Jew, who saw the light early enough on and ended up producing this documentary about the real history of 1948 and what led to that and what's been going on ever since. Again, the documentary film, which is available on Netflix. It is also available at least some of the more prominent video stores here in Santa Cruz, California. The title of the film is Voices Across the Divide. Voices Across the Divide by Alice Rothschild, the work of an American Jew. Very engaging, and to many, many people, I'm sure, very surprising. Okay, it's 3:49 p.m. this Monday, November 24th. Let's, I see something. Okay. I don't get a lot of forwards, articles through Feedblitz from the Muzzle Watch RSS feed. But with anyone who keeps an eye on such a critical area of engagement, attempting to expose the stifling of open debate about what Israel is really doing and who the Palestinians really are, I jump on it. I eagerly jump on it. Folks, we're going to talk about commercial television right now. Actually, that's a bit of a misnomer. I want to talk about TV, not internet TV, good old broadcast TV. This isn't even strictly cable network or strictly satellite network or any of those. In fact, it's PBS, Public Broadcasting System. When I was a kid, they called this educational television. But I think somewhere along the line, the public television people decided that calling it educational TV was a little too highbrow, a little too intimidating. People don't want to be educated through their TV sets. They want to be entertained. So that's when they took... Ugh, I shouldn't do that. I slam my keys here haplessly. Instead of catering to people who think they need to be educated or thinks the world needs to be educated using that medium, they changed the emphasis to public TV, serving the more thoughtful, eager to be enlightened public through a public television, PBS public broadcasting. Okay, we all know what PBS is, you know. Identified strongly in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, as Channel 9. And in, through some outlets, Channel 9 and Channel 10. But it is commercial in the sense that it's TV, broadcast TV, without necessarily being like HBO on cable or satellite, that kind of thing. So, Rick Steves Europe is the actual name of his program. The most watched PBS series from what they claim, from what their website claims. Grabbing a little Diet Cola there. And of course, Rick Steves is a gentleman who gallops across Europe and produces these travelogues. There's no question these are travelogues engaging people about the wonders of Great Britain, Venice, and other places in what is probably the most commercially cultural continent on the planet, and could very well be, by some measure, the richest in commercial terms, depending on what market you're talking about, or whether you're talking about tourism or whatever. So Rick Steves has done very well presenting his programs about his travels through Europe. Indeed, TV Travelogue. A couple of years ago, I saw his program on Iran, and I thought, whoa, what, Rick? Hasn't anyone told you that Iran is not in Europe? But I spent nary more than a second or two pulling my hair out over that and saying, actually settling down and saying, wow, congratulations, buddy. You have ventured away from the Western part of the world's epicenter of Europe, gone significantly, 1,000 miles or two, farther east and gone into Iran. He dared to go into Iran and do a program on them. It was admittedly not, of course, it being a travelogue show, he didn't talk too much about politics, but of course he mentioned it. He talked about disagreements between the Iranians or the Iranian government and the U.S. government, but he spoke also a great deal about the similarities between those people and we people. And that is a central theme, if not, at least in Mr. Steve's mind, the most central theme in his programs. We're all people, and that's what it comes down to. Well, a couple of months ago, he finally did it. He produced a program on the Holy Land. He calling it the Holy Land. And he took his Rick Steves in Europe crew down with him, I presume, same people or some of the same people. They ventured into Israel and into Palestine, which of course is to say occupied territories of the West Bank, spent some time in Jerusalem, etc. An hour-long program, which I ended up being, you know, as soon as I heard he was taking his sort of European-centric mindset, as evidenced by the previous years of his programs, and applying it to Israel and Palestine, I was, one way or another, I was thrilled that he was doing it, thrilled at least in the sense that I wanted I was counting the hours, as I put it in a comment that I made here, before the program went on the air, to see how, to witness his treatment of this. And I was actually quite impressed at the fact that, given my Palestinian-American background, given my Palestinian background from my father, understandably impressed that he spoke as well of the Arabs there, the Palestinian Arabs, as he did, and the fact that he dared to talk about some of the politics. Now, I'm going to read you from the comments section that Rick Steves Europe's webpage, brought to us by the PBS webpage, provides for us. They give you an opportunity to comment, as so many other websites and articles, internet-based articles, do. They let you comment. So I muted my TV screen, went right to the computer. Lo and behold, there are absolutely no comments as yet on that page. And here is what I wrote on November the 1st at 9:02 p.m., right after the program ended at 9 o'clock. My words: I am indeed very impressed with Mr. Steve's well-rounded, if not politically and historically thorough, tour of both countries, Israel and Palestine, and his rather courageous willingness to confront the ethnic and cultural aspects of divisions between Arab and Jew. Just a few years ago, he probably wouldn't have even attempted it out of fear that such a candid program would never have been shown, even on PBS. His fairly recent foray into Iran, or Iran, must have emboldened him to venture into the Holy Land on both sides of the apartheid wall. This episode emphasized the absolute necessity for calm discussion of the issues and the things that matter most in people's daily lives amongst the resident populace, even while it is not really happening with their respective leaderships. In other words, even though meaningful discussion is not really happening with their respective leaderships. I continue here. I offer here some very slight criticisms of the presentation. Steves points out in the short historical synopsis that, and I quote, the Arabs rejected the UN partition plan, end quote. And then I write this: the fact is that Palestinian Arabs had only the skeleton remnants of, quote, a leadership left after the Arab revolt of 1936 to 1939. When most of those leaders were either killed or expelled or exiled by the ruling British, who crushed that rebellion. And Palestinian participation in the UN partition proposal was muted to the point of no real voice in the final decision. Resistance to the division of their land was limited to a smattering of disjointed local militias, later supplemented by neighboring Arab fighters who entered the conflict as the Arab Legion. The plan itself, drawn up and submitted by Zionists, the UN plan I'm speaking of, called for most of Palestine to be allocated to Jews only, who at that time comprised no more than 5% of the mandate's total population. I later corrected that. I was thinking of a different statistic. There were far more than 5% of the population of Palestine at that time was Jewish. It was somewhere between one-third approaching one-half of the total population. I think it was roughly a third. So, again, the plan itself, drawn up and submitted by Zionists at the UN, called for most of Palestine to be allocated to Jews only, who at that time comprised less than half of the mandate's total population. One need only look at the segmented Bantustans left to Palestinian Arabs today to begin to appreciate their resentfulness and sense of loss, which thankfully Rick Steves appropriately reported on. If you get a chance, folks, read your TV guides in whatever form it is. for a repeat performance of The Holy Land, assuming it is permitted to be repeated on commercial television again, or go to the PBS website, click on Programs, look for Rick Steves Europe, just like it's spelled, Rick Steves Europe, and you can watch the whole program right there, or at least begin to watch it. They might end up interrupting it, give you a synopsis, and then ask for money or something. I'm not sure. But something is available on video. I think you can actually watch the whole hour-long program there. The Holy Land. The Holy Land on Rick Steves Europe. Okay, and here's my final paragraph in the comments section. The one simple reason for this lasting debacle is the elementary fact that Zionism, as it was first formulated 120 years ago, I'm sorry, folks. We're just full of interruptions today, aren't we? Okay, back to the beginning of the sentence. The one simple reason for this lasting debacle is the elementary fact that Zionism, as it was first formulated 120 years ago and has not in the least changed, was and is a formula for completely redemographying the Eastern Mediterranean into a land for Jews and for Jews only, and that is intrinsic to its philosophy. It means it's an unremovable part of its philosophy. This includes the active pursuit of a policy to transfer, I put in quotes, transfer, and then in parentheses, to ethnically cleanse every last native Jew to parts outside of its influence. This endeavor was reflected several times in interviews in the Rick Steves program. Interviews with Jewish settlers and Green Line Israelis alike, as they constantly refer to the land, both Israeli and Palestinian, as, quote, our land. There is the opening comment, and it's still there, folks. If you go to the PBS, click on Programs, and click on Rick Steves, and then find your way by making a couple of more essential links to the Holy Land program, you will look for the phrase "Share your comments" in the upper right-hand corner, and you will see that comment. Now, it for a very short time was the only comment for a day or two, and then this came up, posted by Chani, just calls herself or himself Chani, in Tel Aviv, which is in Israel, who, by the way, has posted on either the Rick Steves comment section or the PBS's comment section 3,969 posts. She says, "The above response is highly political and blatantly biased. Sadly, that is exactly the kind of discussion that is generally ignited on this topic. I hope that the Rick Steves staff will closely monitor this forum, remove such posts, and limit the discussion to travel-related issues." That was followed immediately by a post from Norma in Montreal, Quebec. She herself having a history of 3,759 posts. Chani, I too would like to see that post deleted. This forum is not for such discussions, which can get heated, and for what purpose? No one's mind will be changed. Good old Ren posts in again. This is my second post directed to Chani and Norma. "And sadly, this is exactly the kind of response to my post I expected to see here on this board. Steve's program itself could not avoid discussion of the political aspects throughout his program, so if talking about it upsets you, then you should be equally adverse to airing this particular episode in the first place. This is one of many parts of the world where presenting a mere travelogue leaves an inadequate gap in appreciating all that should be known about the place." I continue here. "Given the extreme number of posts each of you have made here in the 3,000s, it appears that you can go off to another discussion of your liking elsewhere." I put in quotes here, heated discussion? Well, if you can't stand the heat, then get out of the kitchen instead of doing what you can to delete my one single posts in these forums. In these forums, excluding this one, of course. The second one here. I say, it is clear to me that you are advocating the censorship of free speech by, quote, removing such posts, rather than simply trying to keep the discussion on topic. I note with consternation that one of you is in Tel Aviv. Indeed, you may be worrying that my words might somehow damage the Israeli tourist economy. This problem is highly typical among those who desire to squelch the Palestinian narrative. The end of that post. And, you know, every time I read that part about worrying about this person, possibly worrying about damaging the Israeli tourist economy, it immediately brings to mind how angry Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, got during his attack and a slaughter of about 2,000 Palestinian Arabs, losing only a few dozen Israelis in the process of the attack, while he was bombing the hell out of the Gaza Strip and Gaza City, up and down the Strip, and literally destroying the very lives of people there, and trying to blame it all on Hamas, when the United States, when Obama stepped in and said, hey, for the time being, we're going to halt all incoming flights from the United States to Ben Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv because the airport had been subject to hits or near hits by missiles coming out of the Gaza Strip. Our president was concerned about how American and other non-American lives could be threatened at the airport. What does old Bibi Netanyahu do? He throws a shit fit, and he fires back at the United States saying, this is ridiculous. This interferes with the normal economic and cultural life of Israel. If you are going to stop flights of incoming airplanes and not trust us Israelis to take care of things and protect people, which they ultimately cannot completely guarantee to do, protecting the airport from rockets coming from the Gaza Strip, he still gets mad at the U.S. for essentially for daring to interrupt those flights, temporarily interrupt those commercial flights coming into Israel during Israel's assault, totally unnecessary assault on the Gaza Strip, and the scores that, the couple of thousand people they killed. Here he is complaining about Israel having to suffer this interruption in their normal commercial life. Disgusting. Okay. Let's return to the narrative here. Norma of Montreal shot back and said to me, you have proved my point. Good luck with your mission. I'm not all that sure how my words prove her point. I am indeed sticking with the thing that she got upset about in my first post, so I guess that's her way of looking at it, is that my continued discussion about it proves her point. And then she says, good luck with your mission. I take it to mean her tongue is in her cheek when she says that. Or maybe she's had a miraculous change of heart. Okay. That is the thread. One more thing about that thread of my post, the two subsequent bitching posts about how they feel my words should be deleted and censored so no one in the world will hear them, my response, and the one back again. A second letter came in about Rick Steves' The Holy Land show. Separate thread now, but the same comments board. The title, these people, is Please Keep to the Travel Guide Business. Posted by so-and-so, this one on November 15th, a little over a week ago. My wife and I have always loved your travel programs. Remember now, the first several years of his programs are centered, if not completely, taking place in Europe. My wife and I have always loved your travel programs and have often felt inspired to visit the places you have vicariously introduced us to. We have been American expatriates, or expats, as it says here, for 10 years, and will probably live abroad for many more. No further details on that. Most recently, our friends traveled to Israel and had a great time. They will be here in a few days to share with us their travel memories. In preparation for this, I watched your Holy Land video expecting the same type Rick Steves informative, quirky, and fun-loving type of video. Here it comes now. Unfortunately, your effort has fell flat and come across as a definitely biased and politically opinionated view of the situation there. I believe you said you wanted to portray a balanced perspective for the traveler, but you came across on the video with your left-wing and liberal perspective completely askew, which was abundantly clear by your closing remarks and misquotes of the, quote, prophets, end quote. Only one prophet actually said, love your neighbor, and it was not the one descended from Ishmael, referring there, of course, to Muhammad. The former referring to Jesus, and the latter part of the sentence there referring to Muhammad. He goes on to say, I appreciate there are families on the other side of the wall, referring to the security/apartheid wall, that are peace-loving, but the truth is the Israeli country is officially not recognized by any Muslim country and is therefore considered, quote, illegal by them, which means the peace process will never have a chance until they acknowledge their rights as a country and then they can be recognized themselves. As though those Islamic countries are not already recognized. It says here, that being said, the actual political motivation and the stated purpose of every Muslim nation is the annihilation of the Israeli state. That is not true. It's not true across the board. It says here, now that is the true state of affairs, he says. I really do feel sorry that the Palestinian people are held hostage by their own quote-unquote government policies that countermand their desire for peace. Poor research and a totally biased piece of political video dressed up as a travel video has left me with the desire to not watch anything you produce in the future. I am very glad you have the right to your opinion, but please in the future stay away from things that are out of your depth or desire to truly dig for the truth. And then he says here, the truth has been rejected. I am sure you have received many comments like mine, so please heed them and re-edit the video away from your let's just all get along vlog video log and make it the typical Rick Steves travel guide video we have grown to love. Thank you for your past efforts. I hope there is a future after this one. Sincerely disappointed. P.S. When we travel to the Holy Land, I will not reference your books or videos. So their boycott of Rick Steves products goes right into play there. A promise of ignorance and a boycott of Rick Steves educational items. Okay, here's the next item. Now, amongst these comments, you will have the occasional, perhaps more than occasional, clarification thrown in by a Rick Steves staff member. This is posted by Nancy in Bloomington, Illinois, apparently one of Rick Steves' staff. Rick doesn't actually read the helpline posts, whatever helpline is, except for some answers from staff. We are all just volunteers answering questions. You might want to express your views directly to the office instead. Good old Chani. Remember Chani who commented on my first original post on this board? She came in with over 4,000 posts. She says, actually, the helpline is indeed encouraging people to do just that. I guess she means to get people to express their views directly to the office instead. Basically, Chani here is trying to convince the reader of her comment that they're supposed to be talking about the content of the show as it pertains to travelogue stuff and not politics. She admits herself that Rick Steves' community guidelines state, While we expect some political discourse, while we do expect some political discourse in this forum section, any inflammatory political rhetoric, anti-Arab sentiments, or anti-Semitism will result in swift banishment from the forums. Report guideline violations. And then she says, I don't have any idea why they choose to encourage political discourse in a travel forum. And of course, on the topic most likely to push people's buttons. But that's exactly what they are doing. Of course, it is up to the powers that be, quote-unquote, to determine what they deem as inflammatory political rhetoric. And then she signs off by saying, sigh. Rick chimes in saying, not to discourage posting here, but if you want to discuss political issues Rick Steves is raising, I suggest that you follow him on Facebook, where he is inviting political discussions about travel as a political act. That is a subject area. Rick Steves' Facebook section, Travel as a Political Act. And yes, I did essentially repost my first comment there. I need to check in to see if it's still there, because I've had the experience of entering someone on someone's Facebook page and then finding out that it's mysteriously disappeared. I have had that experience. Roy says, I have read only portions of some of these posts, but the discussions I have seen have been thoughtful, civil, and diverse. Okay. Now, I, of course, need to make my reply to this first one by the expat couple who are so deeply offended by the fact that that Rick Steves had anything decent to say about Palestinian Arabs or anything to say about the potential viability of Palestine. Here is that post, my third in total to the Rick Steves comment section. In watching Rick Steves Europe, one nagging little bugaboo had stayed in the back of my mind until recently. Why only Europe? Aren't there other countries of the globe that might hold equal, if not greater, fascination for the typical Western viewer and viewpoint? My assumption has always been that cultural bond which connects we Americans to those the shortest distance across the pond, that it makes for a more watchable TV, which in turn often translates into increased commerce with what is by far the most lucrative overseas market for us. And then I say here, by the way, I tend strongly to include Israel into both these categories. The Western European cultural bond and lucrative overseas market, I tend strongly to include Israel into those into both these categories, a lucrative market and an essentially European culture. Forgive the redundance there. I go on to say, this is exactly why I was thrilled when Steves ventured into Iran, even though it was probably a bit too on the goody-goody side, in an effort to embrace brotherly love as a common human theme. It is good to hear that Turkey will also be covered soon, the country, during Turkey time. I didn't write that last thing. Going on here, being a Palestinian descent myself, I then counted the hours until the Holy Land's first airing, and as I described in an earlier comment on this board, I was mostly pleased. What I bemoan primarily about your post here, and then I give the name of the person of that awful post, is that while you defile what you see as, quote, definitely biased and politically opinionated content in the program and continue to use similar absolutisms throughout your bitter comments, and then side with Israel in bleeding heart fashion, you are demonstrating the very high-tempered flamer rhetoric that others on this board prefer to avoid. I know because I got the same treatment from some of them, although not so much due to patently inflammatory baiting on my part, but because they disagreed with my facts and sentiments of the politics, even though my points were clearly in positive appreciation of Steve's work, of Rick Steves' work. These same dismissers also flagrantly stated their desire for my entry to be deleted from the discussion. as I've read to you. In your post here, I most certainly see the same attitude. You dismiss Rick's attempt to present both sides in the tensions of Israel-Palestine as a, quote, left-wing and liberal perspective. Yet this makes it crystal clear to me that your perspective is drastically and unreasonably skewed in Israel's favor, and that you are upset that he has the audacity to expose the alternative narrative. Or the alternate narrative. I go on to say, to write here, I believe that most viewers of the show would agree with me that Rick deserves kudos for humanizing the players who all happen to be residents of that land. Clearly as well, almost all the commenters here do not feel that way. But you know what they say about the proverbial squeaky wheel. If one believes that it is sinful to humanize Palestinians and other Arabs, one will go straight to the one place where they can be heard and possibly have an effect upon the board's monitors. Obviously, this is an effort to punish Rick Steves for daring to share with the world his observations and study when they don't concur with your own. Your crocodile tears for those Palestinian people who are peacefully inclined and accusations that the PA, referring to the Palestinian Authority, is to be blamed for their own terrible misfortune completely eludes the demonstrable fact that the only real reason that there is presently no state of Palestine on the map is that Israel's leaders do everything in their power to prevent it from happening. It is not because the entire Arab world refuses to recognize the Jewish state, which, by the way, is another absolutism, and is only partly true. End of my response, or my argument to that other long, bitter comment by the expats. No, I tried to say, I started to say something about the very first letter which opened the founding comment on this board, and then somehow I ended up not saying it. For all that, for the earlier discussion, which cascaded after I congratulated Rick Steves on his Holy Land program, the two ladies, apparently, women who responded wanted to see my post deleted because they couldn't stomach it, and they used the excuse of keeping the board controlled strictly to travel issues, and I went on to explain you cannot separate one from the other. Okay. If you look at, if you go to the comments page that I'm reading from, you will see that Johnny, while they were asking the monitors to do with away with my long post there, instead the monitors chose to get rid of Johnny and Norma's comments. It clearly indicated that my both complimentary and critical words were welcomed, and that their complaints about my audacity to say those things were not welcomed. So you will only see my comments there now. Now, continuing along with the second, everything that followed the second comment. Okay, I read my thing. I couldn't help it, but flash it in Norma and Johnny's face. I said, Norma and Johnny, did you happen to notice the staff monitor's rather ironic decision to delete your post instead of mine? Fascinating, huh? And in a classic case of touche, the Rick Steves monitors deleted that pair of sentences, both questions. Touche indeed. I cannot hold it against them. It could easily be said that since I clearly was throwing that back into the faces of other contributors to the board, that could be a way of trying to flame into a rhetorical argument. So I'm not gonna hold that against them. And then there was a flurry of 1, 2, 3, 4 at least seven posts all by monitors of the board. I'm not going to spend more time because they talk about a lot of technical stuff and philosophical stuff. But overall, the staff clearly welcomed my posts, and as well as the criticism from this second main criticism. And okay, so I make one more long comment here, and now officially my third posts, taking note of the fact that there are all these staffers who are clarifying things on the comments board. Whoa. I write here, whoa, suddenly the majority of quote-unquote comments here are being made by staff. I, too, would be buoyed by the addition of more viewer comments, but I think their dearth says something about the nature of most of Rick's followers. Compared to the heavier content on PBS's programs, such as Frontline, in-depth news reporting, operas, and other highbrow entertainment, Rick Steves provides a respite in the form of a lighter touch along the lines of commercial TV-style zone-out shows. This will turn even well-seasoned public television viewers into armchair potatoes, my phrase, content to ease up and just take in the scenery and Rick's beckoning narration without having to think too much. This casual interlude from their immediate reality inherently has less demand upon the viewer's knee-jerk tendencies to be critical or complimentary, politically or otherwise, of what they see. Most probably do not care to elaborate their concerns on message boards when in this take-a-vacation mode. In the case of RS's Holy Land show, I am guessing that most of them are most viewers are minimally or at least insufficiently educated about the historical and current situation and are either intimidated by the political discussion or downright frightened at the prospect of involving themselves into a topic so fraught with violence and hurt that they quite understandably back away from even talking about it. Given the media's if it bleeds, it leads approach to, quote, informing the populace of the daily tumultuousness of it, this is not so surprising. The other possibility, which I tend to focus on for the public's disinclination to participate, is that they are overwhelmingly impressed by the show's content. Its presentation of the observable facts on the ground and, in this case, a remarkably balanced and insightful look into the daily lives of Israel's and Palestine's residents, albeit very limited in the full story, which cannot possibly be told within a one-hour time frame. A glaring exception to this demographic explanation, demographics of the TV audience, of course, is the very founding entry of this thread, authored by a couple so incensed by the fact that the native Arabs were not given short shrift and not left holding the blame for the Middle East's ills that they lambasted his producer for being, quote, left-wing and, quote, too liberal, I added the word too, T-O-O, and then quite predictably threatened him with an almost certain boycott of his product and the recommendation that he self-censure his own work to avoid future condemnation by an imagined majority. I'm referring there to the insistence of that couple's comment, or the man speaking for him and his partner there, their insistence that Rick Steves probably got a lot of similar criticism, similar to his viewpoint, about the show. And there I have seen practically, I've read everything that the people who didn't like the show, who bothered to write in, wrote. That's why I use the phrase, the recommendation that he self-censor his own work in order to avoid future condemnation by an imagined majority. This person is imagining that most people won't like it. And I think that the very reverse of that is obviously true. Folks, again, I remind you that these comments are all available at the Share Your Comments section of the Holy Land Show link on Rick Steves' web page, which you can get to through PBS, or you can just Google Rick Steves and probably get to the same website. But please, please, I think it is, out of all fairness and appropriateness, I'm asking you not to add any comments until you've seen Rick Steves' The Holy Land program. Watch the program first, or at least listen to it if you cannot view it while you're listening. And then I would suggest that you can make your comments. I would agree that it is not appropriate for people to use this comments board as a general political free-for-all unless you've seen the show and you need to see it first and then make your comments. So that's what that's all about. A little more music. Now you need a little break from my voice, don't you, folks? Ugh. How did this happen? I never turned off the DVD to begin with.
I think it's kind of interesting the way things get to be. The way the people work with their machines. Serenity's a long time coming to me. In fact, I don't believe that I know what it means. Experience and trying to find my own way. Sometimes I wish that I could fly away. When I think that I'm moving, suddenly things stand still. I'm afraid 'cause I think they always will. And I'm looking for space, and to find out who I am. And I'm looking to know and understand. It's a sweet, sweet dream. Sometimes I'm almost there. Get lost in the sadness and the screams. And I look in the center, suddenly everything's clear. I find myself in the sunshine and my dreams. And I'm looking for space and the fire. When you're looking to try and reach the stars. crystal clear ocean to ride on the crest of a wild raging storm. To work in the service of life and the living, in search of the answers to questions unknown. To be part of the movement, part of the growing, part of beginning to understand. Strangers in your silent world, to live on the land we must learn from the sea. To be true as the tide, free as a wind swell, joyful and loving in letting it be. Calypso, the places you've been to, the things that you've shown us, the stories you tell.
Once again, John Denver. Ooh, that was loud. That last item, of course, being his hit, Calypso. That song is in tribute to the aforementioned name of Jacques Cousteau's and his team's research boat, the French team there, Calypso. The song in tribute to it and them. That was preceded by one of my favorite songs, Looking for Space, and we heard a little bit of Eclipse when I started the music. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.3 on the FM dial, and we are streaming at freakradio.org, freakradio.org. Streaming and broadcasting once again, and we're still trying to get the word out to everyone that if we're not doing one, if there's an interruption in along one of those two ways of transmitting the signal, we're still available on the other. Of course, with the past year and a half or so, we've had these intermittent problems with being able to transmit on standard airwaves. But all that time, we've been streaming on the online service. So please, please, whichever one you're listening to me on now, don't forget to tell everybody in the world for whom you want to promote this lovely underground pirate community radio service. that if we're not on one, we're on the other. Right now, we are broadcasting at 101.3 FM, and we're streaming live on their computers. Make sure everyone understands this, because I'm always afraid that if one goes to their usual channel, link, dial, or whatever, to tune us in, and they can't find us, I'm always afraid that people are going to decide, oh, they finally bit the dust, kick the bucket, there is no more free radio. It is not true. Free radio is alive and well and broadcasting. And don't forget, you know, you've got the two venues. You've got broadcasting, you've got the online stream, and then, of course, there are the archives in various places where you can pick up past episodes of some of Free Radio shows and all of mine. Go to radioforall.net or go to the Santa Cruz Media Center Indie Bay website for the archive containing refeeds of my programs. And I know of some of the other programmers' shows here as well. So we're still going. We're trying to make it work now. And as a matter of fact, coming up in a few months, early next year, will be indeed the 20th anniversary of Santa Cruz's free radio service. You'll hear more about this in March of 2015. We'll be having the big birthday party for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you are listening to the Mideast Madness Show with your host, friendly neighborhood Palestinian American. My name is Ren Tawil. Ren, R-E-N Tawil. Ray of Hope. Brought to us by Cecily Saraski, Jewish Voice for Peace. This is the JVP newsletter. How Jewish Voice for Peace became one of the fastest growing Jewish organizations in America. And I got to do two downloads in a row here to get to it. Okay, JVP News for this month, November 2014. Israelis and Palestinians, two peoples, one future. JVP organizers make an impact. This starts off as another besiegement for donations, so they can keep up their lovely work, and it is very vital, lovely work. Says here, we asked Liza Berendt, Boston chapter organizer, to tell us about what it's like to organize with JVP. How did you get involved? It seems to take the place of something of an interview here. Question, how did you get involved? Liza Berendt said, I went on a birthright trip to Israel while Israel was bombarding Gaza during Operation Cast Lead in 2008. And I was shocked by the trip leader's disregard for Palestinian life. Back home, my Jewish community refused to act in the face of this injustice, so I joined Students for Justice in Palestine and later co-founded a JVP campus chapter. After graduating from Brandeis, I interned with the organizing team and then joined the national board. JVP mentorship over the years made a huge difference to my leadership, understanding, and skills. For example, JVP organizers helped us respond when our campus's Hillel's refusal to admit the JVP chapter became a national story. And, of course, there's a question as to how much power Hillel had or how much it was Hillel's business to refuse to admit the JVP chapter. Well, I guess if she's referring to Brandeis University, I believe that is a essentially Jewish pro-Israel campus. So that might answer the question. Question, what does an organizer do? I think the most important thing is listening. gaining a deep enough understanding of other activists' vision so that you can support them in bringing those ideas to life. That listening happens everywhere, in meetings, on the phone, over breakfast, late at night. On a typical day, I might edit press releases, lead a training on meeting facilitation, ask members to flyer for our Boycott SodaStream campaign, and juggle dozens of phone calls and emails in between. There is no work I'd rather be doing, she says. Now, there is more to this article, but I don't know how to get to the rest of it. So these are amount to some very abbreviated comments by JVP members. Emily and Andrew. Emily and Andrew, University of California, Santa Barbara. After returning from Israel-Palestine, we knew that we wanted to continue to fight for justice and end to the occupation of Palestine. We were eager to help start a local chapter because we knew that having JVP on our campus would help shift the conversation on Israel and Palestine and increase campus activism for a just peace. Elena Stein, South Florida. The South Florida chapter grew out of the urgency of the Israeli assault on Gaza this summer. We're humbled to join the larger JVP network in organizing to end the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands, for a just solution for Palestinian refugees, and for respect for the human rights and self-determination of all people. Amanda Lundquist, Western Massachusetts. I've been wishing there were a chapter in Western Mass. It didn't occur to me that I could start one myself. Thankfully, it occurred to Dory Midnight, who had a suspicion that we'd all be looking for each other after this summer's heartbreaking siege on Gaza. Brief comments there by leaders of Jewish Voice for Peace. And I do not want to actively plug for them on this program today by giving details of how to do that, short of saying, please, just... there's the second half of the article. Just Google JVP or Jewish Voice for Peace, and you'll, before long, believe me, you'll find out how you can contribute, join, or get more information. Again, this program, this Mideast Migraines radio program, is not, I repeat, this program is not an active mouthpiece for JVP specifically or any organization other than Free Radio Santa Cruz. But I am indeed taking advantage of the opportunity to spread the word. They are indeed a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. I certainly hope they're tax-exempt. What do they call that? 501c3 status? I may as well continue reading the rest of this. The rest of this article about Lisa Barrett, Boston chapter organizer. Says here, the question, how did JVP Boston respond to Israel's attack on Gaza this summer? We were inspired by Palestinians' resiliency in Gaza and around the world. It was time to fill the streets, speak truth to elected officials, interrupt corporate complicity, and stop Jewish leaders from supporting a massacre in our names. We worked with a dozen other peace and justice organizations to form the #Mark Boston for Gaza Coalition, which turned out 2,000 people for an emergency rally. 2,000 for an emergency rally. That's kind of like what we had back in August, just to block the boats in the port of Oakland, to block the SIM cargo lines, Israeli cargo companies' boats from landing and doing business on American shores. It says here, we held the street outside the State House, suspending business as usual for more than 3 hours. It was a display of power that almost every news outlet in Boston print and TV and radio covered. They were lucky they got that kind of coverage compared to the lack of it in here in Oakland, California. Says, social media lit up. Politicians could not leave work without seeing a die-in on their front steps. As night fell, local Palestinian activists read the names of people killed in Israel's attacks, and our community cried and mourned together. During Cast Lead, I remember feeling confused, helpless, and like opposing the war was a fringe position. This summer, I was just as devastated and outraged, but I felt clear, focused, and like part of a growing global consensus. Whether we demonstrated against an occupation profiteering corporation or a Jewish community pro-war rally, as we did it as part of JVP and the Palestinian-led BDS movement, there's no work I'd rather be doing. Jewish Voice for Peace. JewishVoiceForPeace.org. info@JewishVoiceForPeace.org. You might try even JVP.org. www.JVP.org. Well, that wraps up the readings for today, folks. I'm going to let you go here. Finally, thank God, you're all saying. I'm so tired of his monotonous pontificating. Well, what else is radio for, huh? What? Play music, you say? Huh? We don't need no stinking music. Maybe a little John Denver once in a while. Let me remind you that you can make a comment online. Fire out an email to MideastMadness@gmx.com. MideastMadness@gmx.com. That's for your email communications. RadioForAll.net and Santa Cruz Media Center, Indy Bay, for the archives of my recorded programs. 2 days ago, on the Saturday edition of Mideast Migraines, which comes to you at 11 a.m. every Saturday, 11 o'clock a.m. Pacific Time, I announced that I was going to begin the reading of Freedom Sailors about my and 43 other peoples, actually more than 43 other peoples, adventure sailing from the port of Larnaca on the island of Cyprus into the port of Gaza City in August of 2008. That actually happened 4 months before Operation Cast Lead began, Israel's first of these three major insane assaults on the Gazan Palestinians. I'm going to put off the beginning of the reading until the Saturday after, seeing as how this is a holiday weekend, and 2 days after Thanksgiving and 1 day after Black Friday, people will be too exhausted. Even us who claim to be not so commercially oriented, I just don't think it's a good weekend, a four-day holiday weekend, to begin the book. And that occurred to me after I made the announcement. So let's talk a little more about the nature and the origins of Zionism, Israeli Zionism, on the Saturday show, and then on, let's see, it would be Saturday, December 6th, I'll begin the reading of Freedom Sailors. Essentially a publication of the Free Gaza movement. Thank you again for listening. Talk at you later. Ta-ta.